Headlines. This week, our guest will be Harav HaGaon Rabbi Usher Weiss, the Mechaba of the Minchas Usher, all, I don't know, 12 volumes of it. He's also the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital in Yerushalayim, which is a very prestigious position. Rav Shlomo Zalman was Rav there, or the Tzitz Eliez was Rav there. He's also Av Bezdin and Arish Koil, and the topic will be OCD in Halacha, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. We all know people who have this disorder. And we'll be hearing, to my knowledge, he's the first one who's written on it. You can listen to us on WMCA 570 or WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. And if you have any questions, you can always email us at info@headlinesbook.com. That's I-N-F-O, info@headlinesbook.com. Now, for those of you who don't like to listen to the radio at 11 o'clock on a Matzah Shabbos, and my sympathies are with you, you can listen to us at the much more humane hour of 11 a.m. on Monday when the show is replayed on the Nachum Siegel Network. That's 11 o'clock on Monday morning, much more godly hour. Now, last week we had a raffle to see where our listeners are listening and what stations, etc. And we announced there to be a few winners. And we have three winners. We have Dvorah Margolis, YY Fried, and here's an interesting one, Gedalia Levin. Here's a shout-out from Australia. We actually have listeners from down under in Melbourne, Australia. Now, you know, the Gemara says, the Gemara says, and imagine, this is so much further. This is, I don't know, this is 20,000 some odd miles away, or I shouldn't say 20,000, but it's 24 hours of travel anyway from where I am, so it's really quite an honor. I also want to do a shout out, somebody who sent me some really nice emails, the CEO of the show's fan club, Avram Yitzchak Rubin. And here was a great suggestion. We have a listener by the name of David Tannenbaum who said, why don't we get Ahmad Zayat, who's an Orthodox Shomer Shabbos fellow from Teaneck, who is the owner of a Triple Crown winner, American Pharoah. He said, why don't we get him on the show and ask him to discuss the complexities of running a horse on Shabbos, and how are you Shomer Shabbos and get to watch the horse, etc. And we reached out to Mr. Zayat, and he said right now he's not doing any interviews. He's actually, you know, I guess post-Triple Crown. You must be pretty busy. But he said perhaps at a later date he would, and we, if we can, we will try to get him onto the show. So we have the honor, you know, we're always looking for new cutting topics. And certainly one of the Rabbanim, the Paiskim in the world, who stands on the edge of the Shilas of cutting medical issues, technology issues, etc., is the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital in Eretz Yisrael. It was a very eminent position. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to be Rav of Shari Tzedek, and after that, the great Tzitz Eliezer, all 19 volumes, which everybody in the world uses. And today, the Paisik of Shari Tzedek, who ascended to their position, is Harav HaGaon Reb Usher Weiss. He's also the Gaivid of Darkei Torah in Yerushalayim. He's also the Rashiv of Darkei Torah. And we are fortunate that we have such a preeminent Paisik who also speaks English. Now, interestingly, most Paiskim today don't speak English, even though it says that to get onto the Sanhedrin, you would have to know 70 Lashinus, Ayin Lashinus, but most of them don't. But we're fortunate enough to have him, and he agreed to that I could tape a number of questions that I would replay on air that I think are very relevant to cutting edge issues that, to my knowledge, some of them nobody has addressed, and a few of them you've seen haven't been addressed by others. So I'd like to ask the Rav, I know you wrote a tshuva about OCD in Halacha, and could you give us a little bit as the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital and somebody who has a big department that works with nervous disorders, a big area to work with psychology and other mental disorders. What has your been experience and what type of halachas have you had to paskin in this? And give us a little bit of your conclusions.
First of all, I'm happy to have this opportunity, and many times I tell my Talmidim and my Beis Medrash and our wonderful Kailo that our generation really needs Gedolim of the stature of the Ramban and the Rashba, because we are confronted with Shailes Shelo Sharum Avoteinu in many different areas, in medicine, in technology, in bioethics, even in business, in commerce, and in finance. And our world is moving forward in such an unbelievable pace that we really need the greatest of Gedolim. We need the Rishonim to address the issues, because sometimes we have tremendous difficulty in finding sources. And many times we need to rely on Sevora. But we don't have the Ramban, and we don't have the Rashba. So we need to try in the most humble way to rise to the challenge and address the burning issues of our time. Regarding OCD, this is something that is very, very common and very prevalent in our society. And sometimes I am asked that people that are suffering from OCD and they have tremendous difficulty in davening properly. And by nature of this illness, it is compulsive, it is obsessive, and sometimes people are tormented in the way they daven or bench. So the tshuva you mentioned in Minchas Osher, one of the last tshuvas in the second volume of Minchas Osher, deals with the Talmud Chochem that feels that he can't even say Shem Hashem properly. And he spends many hours a day just trying to bench, to say Krishna, to daven. And the psak I gave him basically was that try to daven once, do your best, and never go over either a Shem or a Baruch or a Posek twice. Based on a very famous Tshuven Chsam Sofer, Or Chaim Simen Pei Gimel, the Chsam Sofer deals with the question whether a Jewish child, obviously with very limited mental potential, by halacha criteria, this child probably would never be a Bar Chiyuva. He would be defined as a Shaita. Whether he could be put into an institution in which he will eat Nevelis HaTzreifis. That was the situation in our society till some 20 or 30 years ago, until we suddenly became aware that we also have children with special needs. And Baruch Hashem, today, in every Jewish center, in every firm center, we have Moistas Al Taharas HaKodesh to really take care of these children. But in the days of the Chsam Sofer, that was the only option. And the Chsam Sofer has a lengthy tshuva. We will not go through the entire tshuva. But an argument the Chsam Sofer makes is, if that is the way to bring this child back to normalcy and to move him forward and make him progress, then it should be muta. And the Chsam Sofer, I think it's a spark of genius, brings up an argument from the Gemara Misha Mahalach Bamidbar, and he doesn't know what day is Shabbos. He can't make him halacha only kedei chayav. But Chazal did not limit him in the area of tchumin. So he has to cover as much distance as possible. So why wasn't he limited regarding tchumin, just like he's limited regarding Asiyas Malacha? Especially if Yud Beis Mil is Menatoira. So the Chsam Sofer says, our goal is to get him out of the wilderness, to get him out of the Midbar, to bring him back to Mukum Yishuv. And therefore, in this area, Chazal didn't limit him in any way. The Chsam Sofer argues in a similar way, this child is suffering from limited mental capacity. So it is our interest to bring him into the category to be a Bar Chiyuva and enable him to be Mekayim all the mitzvahs, and therefore that should override, even if it would be considered, Safina Lebiyadayim. It is similar to the concept, not the same, but similar to the concept that we learn in Masechet Yomid, Daf Pei Vav Chalal Lulav Shavasachas, Kedei Sheyishmor Shabbos Hazar. And knowing that the treatment of OCD necessitates letting these people get out of their tension and their stress, even if you wouldn't be properly mekayim these mitzvahs, our psak would be, do the best you can and move on, because that is the only chance to help these people in their healing process and to enable them in the future to be mekayim the mitzvahs b'shleimus. So this person turned to me once again, and he was persistent, and he asked, but am I mekayim mitzvahs tefillah? Am I mekayim mitzvahs kriya shema or not? And I wrote an additional tshuva that is not printed in my sforim yet. I hope it'll be bekorov in chelek gimel, in which I argue, and I think it's a big chiddush, but I stand behind that chiddush because I am thoroughly convinced that it's Torah Semes. Regarding mitzvah tefillah, if you do the best you can, it is not only that you're not mechuyev to do more than that. It is not only that my psak based on the Chasam Sofer would be, do your best, move on, because our primary interest is to heal you. He is also mekayim the mitzvah. And that is unique about mitzvah tefillah and one other mitzvah out of the Taryag. Only tefillah and tshuva. And these two mitzvahs, if a person cannot be mekayim the mitzvah b'shleimus, not because he doesn't want to, because that is ritzayin Hashem, if he does his best, he's mekayim the mitzvah. And that is based on various sources in Chazal. There's a Medrash Tehillim Mem Hei, Rochash Libi Dovar Toiv. Lahoy Diyacho, according to the Loshon of the Medrash, Shelo Yuchlu Lehisvadis Befihem, Kivan Shel Rochash Libom Bitshuva, HaKodesh Bochu Mekable. The Rambam's opinion, Perek Aleph Aluch Aleph and Hilchas Tshuva, as very well known, is that Vidui Pe is Ma'akev. And the Rambam writes Meferesh, Ashav Beliboy, Velo Yezvade Bepiv, Lo Kiyem Mitzvahs Tshuva. It is not only that he wasn't Makai Mitzvahs Tshuva, he has no Kapora either. So the two aspects of Tshuva, Kiyum Mitzvahs Tshuva, and Kapora Tshuva, according to the Rambam, are dependent one upon the other. And even if he had tshuva shleima beliboy, if it wasn't misvada bepeh, loy ol suloy. Af al pikein, the Medrash says, loy yochlo lehizvadas befiem, HaKodesh Baruch Hu mekable. As we all very well know, we don't pass him from the Medrash. But that is not only a medrash.
Well, the Gemara says is also Shemi Yeshir Tshuva V'Libay Hariz Et Tzadik Gemara. So we do have, and the Rambam brings that Lalacha.
Right, but in Minchas Sosha, in two different sources, Devorim and Moyadim Chelak Aleph, I wrote about Tshuva and Vidui. I always tell my Talmidim, I don't remember the simonim in Minchas Sosha. I remember the Simona Mitzvahs and Asivas and Sam Soifa far better than Minchas Sosha for a very simple reason. Minchas Sosha by me is not Gersa de Yankusa. When I was a young man, the Sefer wasn't on the market. So to my dismay, I always tell my young Talmidim, take advantage of every moment. What you learn now, you will remember. So, in several different places in my Sforim, I explained that Gemara and Kiddushin might not be a Raya. Tzadik Gomer, but that doesn't mean he was Zoycha L'Kapora. The concept of a Tzadik is only dependent on Tshuvas Aleiv. Vidui Peh is Kapora. Hirer Aleiv is Tahar. Hareze Tzadik Gomer doesn't mean necessarily he was Mekayim the Mitzvah of Tshuva. And maybe he wasn't even Zarech Kapora. but he is a tzaddik. A tzaddik depends where the person stands at that moment. However, there's a rush at the very end of Masechet Moed Kotan, Moed Kotan Perek Gimel, Siman Ayin Vav. The rush deals with the mitzvah and the obligation for a person to say vidui and do tshuva before his demise. And the Rosh says, "Mi shecholish v'tashkoichoy leizvadas bepiv, mizvada beliboy." And we find the same in the Ramban. Toiras u'adam, inyan havidui. The Ramban brings Masechta Smochis that a person has to do vidui, say vidui before his demise. And I'm quoting the Loshon of the Ramban: "Im yochel leizvadas bepiv yisvada, ve'im lav yitvade belibo." Echod hamisvada bepiv ubeliboy ubelvad shetehei dator miyusheves olav. So, even though the Rambam maintains that vidui is ma'akev, if you did your best, then you were zoicha to be mekayim the mitzvah and you were zoicha lekapora. I think the same concept we find by tefillah. Medrash Rabba, once again, Shira Shirim. And this is shocking, the formulation of the Medrash. Omer Avacha, Amaoret shekoyra la'ahavo eivo. Instead of saying v'yohavto, he says v'yohavto as Hashem Elokecha. Nevertheless, that is what the posuk means in Shir Hashirim, v'dilugoi olai ahavo. Omer HaKodesh Bohu, Vidilugoi, as if it is Viliglugoi. Sounds awful. Ve'uyavtu as Hashem Elokecho. Ke'ilu he is melagleg al HaKodesh Baruch Hu, and afal pi ken, HaKodesh Baruch Hu accepts his tefillah. So once again, that is a medrash. But to me, tefillah and tshuva have something in common, a common denominator. Of all the mitzvahs, these two mitzvahs are not only a mitzvah, but also a schus and a privilege. In mitzvahs tshuva, we are zoicha l'kapora zovein. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that is the greatest gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed upon us. The Rambam writes, Kol yomav b'cheit, shav b'tshuva, shuachas lefnei moisoi, keilu l'chotu miyoylo. The same with tefillah. In Brochas Davchov, Chazal defined tefillah as rachame. And even though tefillah is a mitzvah to say shazman groma, Chazal say noshem archayev betefillah, because don't they need rachame shemayim, just as the men do. So the common denominator between tshuva and tefillah, beyond and besides these mitzvahs being a mitzvah asay, which is incumbent upon us, they're the greatest matonas and the greatest privileges a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us. By tefillah we are zoicha l'rachamei shemayim, and by tshuva we are zoicha l'kapora zovein. And therefore, to me it seems a svora pshuta. It is impossible. There should be a odom mi Yisrael, for reasons that don't depend on his will, doesn't have the opportunity and the ability to be mekayim mitzvahs tefillah and be zoicha l'rachamei shemayim, or being mekayim mitzvahs tshuva and to be zoicha l'kapora zovein. And therefore, my tshuva to the many young people that are tormented by OCD and they feel that they can't daven properly and they can't bench properly. So it is not only that my psak is do your best and move on because you need to get into a healing process. Far beyond that, I think when they do their best, they are mekayim mitzvahs tefillah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea tefillas kol peh. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea tefillas kol peh, that includes people that cannot really pronounce the words as they should. They are included in ki'atu shomea tefillas kol peh. And because of the unique status of these two mitzvahs, I think every Odom Yisrael could be mekayim these mitzvahs and to have the privilege to be zeichet to what comes along with these mitzvahs.
You know, Rabbi Zevin brings in his svarim, he brings a story, he says, of a farmer who who came into the Baditshiva, who davened in Shul Rosh Hashanah by night, or was it Yom Kippur by night, and the Baditshiva said, he kept stopping the daven, and he said, the tefillos aren't going through. And a farmer boy came in, and he was ignorant, he didn't know how to daven, but he saw how everybody was davening more and more consternation, with more and more slahavas, because the Baditshiva was so worried, and he started screaming, cock-a-doodle-doo, at the top of his voice. And he brings that the Baditshiva stopped, and he said, somebody just said something, and our tefillos went through. And this is, so it's Sipurei Chassidim, yeah, from Rabbi Zevin, but it's certainly, I'm not bringing Yehud, I'm bringing a Maisa as a, you know, to...
Yes, that is a typical Chassidish story with the Chassidish spirit. A similar story is told about the Baal Shem Tov, that a boy who was totally ignorant of Yiddishkeit walked into Shul on Yom Kippur, and he couldn't daven, but all he could do was whistle. And he whistled on the top of his lungs, and the Baal Shem Tov said that he was mevatel kitrug. So those are Hasidish stories. In all their beauty and warmth and love, but the people that turn to me with questions, I don't think that Litvish Talmud Chochem would feel totally comfortable.
What would you say about mikveh?
If all I would... is the story of the Baal Shem Tov.
What would you say about a question of mikveh? Let's say you have a woman who's, you know, she'll take her mascara off 200 times or clean under her nails 200 times. Would you say the same psak?
No, see, the affects us in many different ways, and that is one of the common problems and manifestations by from men, primarily in davening, and by from women, primarily in Dinei Tahara. I cannot say that chatzitza is the same as tefillah. What I explained a few moments ago is unique to tshuva and tefillah. But when the mikveh lady is aware of it, that she is totally clean after three times, and 197 times or above and beyond what needs to be done, I mean, we should do our most to comfort those people and see to it, but I mean, they need treatment. And
Could we use the Chassam Sofer to say you only have to clean one time, you're not allowed to look back, and that's it, because we're going to be Simach on the Chassam Sofer. Chassitz is a Drabban, and it's almost impossible to figure a case where it would be a Daraisa. And basically, what's be Simach on the Chassam Sofer, because we want you to get better?
We definitely could say that, but once again, I assume that after one time, there is no chatzitza. I mean, the body of an OCD patient is no different than the body of any other person. And therefore, once is enough. But we need to find ways to calm these people and to try to ease them along the way to heal, and that is the way.
Can I suggest another possibility? That the because the Chassam Sofer does equivocate a little bit about this heta, and a possibility is that we, you know, there's a Tshuvas HaMiuchesis LaRamban that equates somebody with a psychological nervous disorder. He says that has a din of a chayla sheyesh by sakana. And I actually went online and I saw that the rate of suicide of OCD is between 5 and 50%, depending on which resource you believe, but a minimum of 5%. And 5% is a very high, in other words, Hatzala would come in a moment for somebody who said has a 5% chance of dying with Mevatel Shabbos. It's up to 1,000, according to most Paiskim. So if there's a chance of suicide, and even though it's not on this one event, but they mushroom, so would the possibility of saying it has a din of a chayla sheyesh by sakana be a sibah to be matir and say to an OCD person, you do it once, like the stipend used to say, do it once and don't look back, as another sniff to be matir?
I don't think we need to go to the extreme of chayla sheyesh by sakana to be matir. In most cases, we're dealing maximum with a bit of mitzvah to say. I'm also not familiar with the statistics. I doubt that those statistics are relevant to from people. But You know, there's a famous tshuva, some sefer, about an epileptic, and he says it has the din of a cholish shesh b'sakona because he might fall on a rack and hurt himself and in a terrible way, even though that is also quite remote. But the chasam sefer is done that it's a cholish shesh b'sakona. So if those statistics are relevant, there definitely would be basis to utilize the concept of cholish yesh b'sakon as well, but I don't think there's a need to go to that extreme when we're dealing with the halachic issues. What I wanted to point out before is, as much as we try to give these people the psak, you don't have to do more than once. But I find that they are still pained and troubled and struggling with the rishu. And at least regarding Tefillah and Kriya Shema, the additional psak that I gave, and it is not artificial. I stand behind the psak Me'ikar Adin. I think that has brought far more calm to these people, knowing not only that they're potu, but they are yoitzi yedei choyves Tefillah, the first time around, doing their best. A mother always understands her child, or a father. Sometimes I visit people and the babies are chattering away and I don't understand a word. But their father and mother always understand them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ovinu Ovu Rachaman. He understands our tefillahs. I am aware that there is halachic criteria, but as I explained, I feel that halacha lemaisa, if you can't do any better, you're yoitzi yedei choyves ha-tefillah.
You know, let me still to the Chasam Sofer. There's a fascinating Chasam Sofer who says that when Miriam was sick, so Moshe's mispal kelna refanola, three words in effect. So Chasam Sofer asks, his sister was sick, the sister who saved him from the Nile, who stood by the edges and who made sure to have him nursed, etc. And the longest tefillah he could come up with was three words. After the kelna, five words if you count the kelna. So Chasam Sofer says, the essence of tefillah is really 1 second of pure kavana. He says, for most people, you need karbanis, and you need psukit zimra, and birchas kriya, and you, well, hopefully you get to that 1 second. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu went straight to that second. So certainly these people with OCD, they certainly have that second of kavana in all the effort that engenders their tefillah. They probably have a far greater kavana than your average person, knowing the stress that they daven under.
Yes, let me just make a comment. I wrote about this in Agudas Shel Pesach Minchas Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu had two tefillahs, probably the most well-known of all his tefillahs. Keilno Refonola. And Voeschanan, 515 tefillahs. Interesting. Refon Olah was answered immediately. 515 tefillahs went unfulfilled. So
ironic, isn't it?
Yes. So it doesn't depend how long your tefillah is.
It's not quantity, but quality.
Yeah, but let me share with you and with many others my thought about the Tav Kuf Tef of tefillahs, because it would be terrible to say that those were less qualitative than Keil No Refon Olah. We're dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu. So I wrote in Minchas Hashem, for years I've been thinking, whatever happened with those tefillahs, they definitely didn't sink into oblivion. It is impossible that Moshe Rabbeinu's Tav Kuf Tesvav Tfilas went unheard.
Kiminyan Ve'eschanan.
Kiminyan Ve'eschanan. Chazal, three places in Shas teach us that the world in its present form will exist 6,000 years, as well known, you know, in Avodah Zarah Daf Tes, and in Sanhedrin, and in Rosh Hashanah. To be more precise, in Medrash Oisiyas de Rabbi Kiva, the number is Shit Alfin Tzadik Gimel Shonim, 6,093 years. Moshe Rabbeinu Olo Besaro Hashamaimo Beis Alofim Tof Peches Mebrias Oilam, as we find in Seder Oilam Rabosi. People aren't aware of the first history book written Beklal Yisroel. What is it? Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, the great Tana, quoted twice in Shas Bavli, Seder Oilam. If you subtract from 6,093, 2,488, you are left with 3,605 years, which is exactly Tav Kuf Tes Vav Shmitin. Seven times 515 is 3,605 years. From the day that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, his prayers unfulfilled, at Sof Yemei Olam, Tav Kuf Tes Vav Shmitin, Libi Yomali, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, we all need those tefillahs for your children and grandchildren, for Klal Yisrael. Do you insist on going into Eretz Yisrael, or you are willing to give those unbelievable tefillahs? Never before and ever after will there be anything like them. Do you give them to your children, to Klal Yisrael? I haven't seen this idea anywhere. And I think to myself, was Moshe Rabbeinu aware of this? Definitely. Because in Medrash Parshas Vezois HaBrocha, Chazal say, when Moshe Rabbeinu davened, Abrunu ve'eres ha'oratz ha'toivo, Kodesh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe and says, in the past you asked Slachno, now you're asking Abrono. Choose which of the two. And as you can guess, what did Moshe Rabbeinu choose? Moshe Rabbeinu said, Slachnu, I am staying right here. Slachnu la'avoinu amazah. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, please take these tefillahs and give them to my children. And it is only in the merit of those tefillahs that we are still around, that we will make it to the finishing line, l'bi'as goyel tzedek b'korav b'yomeinu.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, the reason I was looking for another source to be matter the OCD, and we went looking for Tshuva Sarajman and others that say that mental illness that can cause, you know, depression, such serious depression, and there was such a high rate of suicide by OCD, is because the Chasam Sofer that he quotes also equivocates and actually is chayzer and, you know, changes his mind afterwards and is machmir. So Rabbi Weiss said, look, you know, I'm a Pesach and I have the right to, you know, choose which part, you know, I could take pieces out of the Chasam Sofer, and that's certainly his right as a Pesach. But it's always good to have another sniff, something else to sort of hang your hat on, which is why I was looking for the Tshuva Sarajpa. But it's certainly, you know, encouraging to have somebody who takes such a humane look at this very sensitive topic. And it's very appropriate to discuss this now because we're Bein HaMitzarim, and particularly now it's the 9 days and it's a time of mourning for Klal Yisrael. We're coming up to the time of the Churban, which is a time of introspection about Sinas Chinam, about, you know, looking at our relationships, how we treat one another. And, you know, we've spoken about it a lot on this show. We've spoken about the Aguna crisis, and we've had Reb David Cohn speaking about Midas. We've had spoken about the Get crisis, divorce, and we've had Rabbi Twersky speaking about Midas. I'd like to share with you an old story, and it's told from different people, but I always heard it about the Sansa Rav, so that's the one I'm going to say the story over with, and clearly you can ask and say who you've, you know. So the story goes like this. Everybody in the world heard of the Sansa Rav. He was the greatest, you know, Rav, probably that Galicia, that part of Galicia, southern Poland, maybe ever had. Should say ever had, you had the Ramah, but for certainly in the, you know, the 18th century, maybe in his children in the 19th century. So he came from a Hasidish background, and he was a cripple. His one leg seemed was a gimpy leg. We don't know what medical terminology of the 21st century exactly what was the matter with it, but clearly he had a crippled leg. And he also came, he was an orphan, and he came from a Hasidic background. And he married the very esteemed daughter of who was then one of the great patriarchs of the entire world, the Baruch Tam, who was printed in the Shulchan Aruch. who had a great rabbinate position. And at some point, you know, one of his sons, I guess, asked his mother, he said, "Mom, you know, how did the shidduch come about? Like, how did this match come about? Like, you come from such different backgrounds, and, you know, father was, you know, his leg, he's a cripple. Like, what, you know, tell me about it." So she told him the following story. She said, "You know, when your uncle, who was my brother, was in Rudnik, which is the town that the sons of Rav grew up in, he said he went to the shul, the synagogue, to daven one morning, and he saw a young man studying very earnestly, and he went over to talk to him, and he was astonished at his genius. So he wrote a letter to my father, and he said, 'I found this most brilliant young man,' and the sons of Rav was known as just an incredible genius, and he said, 'It's for my sister. You must grab this boy.' So, you know, I introduced him, and I sent letters back and forth, and the boy came, and my father, the great Baruch Tam, was really enthralled with him, and he came to his daughter, and he said, 'I have a young man I want you to meet. I guess I'd like to do the shidduch.' So she met him, and when she met him, she was very taken aback by the fact that he was a cripple, and even though she was impressed by his princely character and his brilliance, and he must have been a wit. I mean, the great sons are of. But she came to her father and she said, 'Look, you know, I really don't want to marry a cripple.' She was a young girl, and she said, 'I just can't.' So the father, very disappointedly, the Baruch Tam, went back to the boy and he said, 'I spoke to my daughter and I'd love to her to marry you, but she doesn't want to.' So he understood immediately. He said, 'Let me talk to her. Can I talk to meet her and talk to her for, you know, a few minutes?' So it was somewhat a strange request, but he said, 'Okay.' So he went into a room and they sat for half an hour and they spoke and they came out and they were both, you know, excited, and they said, 'Mazel tov, we're getting engaged.' So he asked his mother, and they say it was Rabaruch of Garlitz, the fourth son. He said, 'What did father tell you?' So she said, The great sons of Rav was both a Kabbalist, he was mystical, he was, you know, a great Kabbalist, he said, "He took me, there was a mirror in the room, and he said, 'Walk over to the mirror,' and I went over to the mirror, and he said, 'Look at yourself,' and I looked in the mirror, and there I was, and I had a crippled leg, and I looked at him in shock, and he said, 'You know, the Talmud teaches us 40 days before children are born, who they will marry is proclaimed. And they came to me and they said, "This will be your spouse." And I looked at you and I said, 'She's such a sensitive soul. How will she deal with her crippled leg?" So I said, "Could you please make me the cripple so that she has two healthy legs and she never has to deal with this?" And she looked back at the mirror and her legs as they were. They were healthy again. And she looked at him and she said, "I'll marry you." Now, if we looked at our own spouses the same way and we said, instead of saying, "What's wrong with her and what's wrong with him and what's, there's something wrong, I wish I could," you know, they say that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I was by his funeral, and he made an astonishing pronouncement. And I actually had a couple, you know, sometimes here in my house we have young couples, and sadly sometimes they don't treat each other with the greatest respect. They make these jokes that have barbs hidden in them and hurtful words. So I said to them, you know, I was by his funeral, and he got up and he said, "The custom is that by a funeral you ask your spouse for forgiveness." He says, "I want to testify, I never hurt her feelings all 62 years we were married." And, you know, they say that Rebel Yashiv's father-in-law, Labaria Levine, his wife fell, and she fractured her arm, and they went running to the doctor. So when they came running into the doctor, Labaria Levine told the doctor, "Our arm hurts." Now, if we have the position that our arm hurts, and how do I take your leg and affix it to me? Wouldn't that do away with so much of the divorce crisis and the shidduch crisis and the aguna crisis? So I think that a lot of these stories, and I do believe, you know, clearly some of them are apocryphal, but there's a message buried in them about relationships that I think during these nine times, that, you know, these the 9 days, the, you know, the yom in between, between Tisha B'Av and between Rosh Chodesh and Tisha B'Av, a particular time for sensitivity. So I'd also like to share a beautiful Torah. I heard this from the Mashkiach of Chaim Berlin, a Talmud of Rav Hutna, Rav Shlomo Kalbach, the brilliant. He's written many Sfarim. I heard this from him 30 years ago. It's something special and beautiful. And he said, you know, this week's Parsha talks about the story of B'nai Gads and B'nai Reuven. The Jews are about to enter the Promised Land. They've been in the desert for 40 years wandering. Everybody knows the story, and they're about to enter the Promised Land. And two Shvatim come along, Gad and Reuven, and they say, you know what? We don't want to enter the Promised Land. There's beautiful piece of land right outside the door, the West Bank. We would like that to be our homeland. And Moshe gets extremely outraged. And there's a whole question as to why. And, you know, there's different explanations in the Mefarshim, and most of them really take them to task. They say, oh, they like money and this and that, highly critical. But he had a very beautiful pshat, and he something very special and beautiful. He says like this. He says, God, when Moshe benches God, when Moses gives him his blessing, he says, Baruch Marchiv God, blessed is God, blessed who is always looking to expand. And the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Leomi Vilna, says, what does it mean he's looking to expand? He says, some people in spirituality, in relationships, they're satisfied with the status quo. And some people are always looking to enrich the environment that they're in. They always come in with a smile, with a thought, what can I do? Is there something that can be built here? Is there a hospital? Is there a bigger chaylim? Is there a yeshiva? Is there something spiritual? Is there somebody in need? He says, Baruch Marach of God is, God is the one, he's a soldier, he's the warrior. The word God means both warrior and also means somebody who has good luck, who's an entrepreneur, somebody who's looking to expand. He's not satisfied with the box that he's in. So he says, Eretz Yisrael, this is the Promised Land. How do we make the Promised Land bring it to the rest of the world? Bring it to the people who don't have Promised Land? How do we bring those who are maybe haven't seen the vision? How do we bring them a vision? So he said, he is the first sort of Jewish missionary. He's trying to bring, you know, we had a few weeks ago, is there a mitzvah to bring the Zion mitzvahs to the Umas Olam? He's bringing the Zion mitzvahs to the Umas Olam. That's good. And what is Reuven? Reuven is very different. Let's look at Reuven. Reuven is sort of the Shevet that is really very misunderstood. When we look at Reuven, let's go back to the beginning. His name means Reuven. Ra Hashem ba'anyi. Leah says, God saw my pain. My husband despised me. It gets worse by Shimon. She says, my husband hated me. It wasn't a very happy marriage at that time. But what does Reuven do? Reuven has a response to it. The first time we see Reuven as an individual, it says, Vayelech Reuven b'meik tzir chitin v'yimtza dudoyim basada. He finds flowers, and he's bringing his mother flowers. And Chazal say the word dudoyim is milashon ani ledodi v'dodi li. They're to induce love. Flowers are typical. What does a chasen send a kala? What does a bride send a groom? He sends flowers. So here's the boy. His parents aren't getting along. And he's bringing flowers to his mother. And he's saying, Mom, how can I make you and Papa get along better? Right? That's what dudoyim are. Extremely sensitive. Ironically, Shimon, who's also called Snua, Rabbi Lashon of Sinna, he has no interest like that. He walks away from Yaakov, and he actually tries to kill Yosef, the beloved son of Yaakov, right? The most beloved son. He obviously protests against his father, but Shimon sees it, Reuven sees it differently. Reuven has empathy. And it gets greater. Which son displaces Reuven among the tribes, among the 12 Shvatim? Yosef. Reuven is supposed to get Pishnaim. He's supposed to get a double shear as the eldest born. Who gets the double shear? Yosef gets it. And then Shimon plots to kill Yosef. Who saves Yosef? The one who was usurped by him. Reuven comes and says, no, 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 you cannot kill Yosef. So when we see Reuven repeatedly, he has empathy, and he has an empathy in the greatest sense. Imagine the one who usurped him, the other Shvatim are silent, and he's the one leaping to his defense. It reminds me of a story. You know, the dean of Kamenetz, Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz, was Rabbi Baruch Ber Grzovsky. And he had a daughter, and she got engaged to one of the very bright young men in the yeshiva. And this is, I believe, brought in one of the Magid's farm, but I've heard it other places as well. And they were engaged. 3 weeks before the engagement, the boy changes his mind. Why? I don't know. Whoever knows, relationships are so difficult. And it was extremely hurtful. The girl was brokenhearted. Rabbi Ber was very upset. Well, this boy was a very bright boy. 2 years later, he applies to a position as a rabbi in a city. And the city sends a letter to Rabbi Baruch Ber, to the dean of the school, saying, can you give us a recommendation on this boy? Now, this is the time to get even, isn't it? Ho ho. Do an op-ed, sharpen your pencil. So Rabbi Baruch Ber wrote a letter back. But he wrote the highest approbation possible. He truly laid the boy out. And you know what he did? How do we know this story? He called three boys of his best students in from the school. And he said, I want you to read the letter. Because I want to make sure that none of the prejudice that I would be feeling because of what he did to me is reflected in the letter. But I am writing totally truthful about his scholarship and his capabilities. And the boy said the letter was a masterpiece of an approbation. I don't know if he got the job or not, but they said it was a masterful letter. But those are really superhuman type of a feat. Most of us wouldn't have that strength of character. Well, Reuven did, right? So what is Reuven? Reuven is really the one whose sympathy knows no bounds. So Reuven, the story always comes out during Bein HaMetzarim, usually during the 9 days. Maybe there's a message over here. So why does Reuven go? Reuven goes to the other side. He doesn't want to enter the promised land because he says, those who entered the promised land, that's beautiful. But what about all the people who never make it there? What about all the broken souls? Let me tell you a story. There was a girl, her name was Sarah. She was a 9th grade girl. She had the most beautiful blonde hair. She was very proud of it. Nice girl, beautiful blonde hair. One day she started getting headaches. This is a parent's worst nightmare. They take her to the doctor. They say, give Advil, give Aleve, send it to an allergist. Then they say, the allergist says, you know, I think you have to go to a neurologist. So the neurologist goes, he listens, looks at the ear and the nose and the mouth. He says, MRI. She goes for an MRI, and they find a growth on her brain. So they come back and they say, look, we think it's operable, right? And they look at it, it's operable. So they take her, and they're going to do the operation. And when they operate on the brain, they shave the head totally. All the hair is gone, as bald as a ping pong ball. And they operate, they remove it. And the girl comes home, she has stitches on her head. And she's sitting at home, and she's crying. She has to go to high school. All her hair is gone. And she's going to have chemo too. And she's bald. Imagine the trauma. So they made up Monday morning after the weekend. She'd been home for a few weeks. She's going to school. This was not going to be an easy day. The bus comes at 8 o'clock. Mother says, I'm going to drive you. What time? 8:30. 8:15, there's a knock on the door. Who's there? Her four best friends. They all shaved their head. And they were all wearing kerchiefs. They all took a razor, shaved all their head on the hair off, and they were wearing kerchiefs so that they could walk in as five girls together into school. Now that's real empathy. And that's a story for the 9 days about really reaching out and, you know, doing something that Reuven does. Reaching, saying those who aren't in the promised land, how do we touch those? You know, the ugly people of the world make so much noise. Right? The mean, the nasty. I mean, I can't, as an American, I can't get away from the news today. And every time there's a particularly ugly, nasty, narcissistic individual seems to be dominating the news today. Just a person who just doesn't have enough bad to say about people and talk about himself. So I think, but this is the time to really, Bein HaMitzarim, to talk about beautiful people and special people. So I would like to speak about a few very beautiful and special people who inspire us, because we can't just allow the ugly people to dominate the airwaves. So I want to tell you a few stories about people who are like Reuven. And you know, a few weeks ago, I had the pleasure, the honor of having in our home an organization called Pillars. And it's run by a number of these beautiful people. It's a couple, it's David and Shoshana Rube, and what did they do? This woman lost her, became an orphan when she was younger, she lost a parent. So she founded an organization, which she runs for free, together with, like, there were four other couples who run it with her. And they had at this time, Shabbos, 50 orphans, when I say orphans, who had lost a parent, and they do groups to them of every age. This was post-high school. And they come together once or twice a month, and it's nothing but positive talk. It's not about the past, and it's not about negative. It's how do we move on? How do we go forward? Out of the 50, I think like 13 were already engaged. But they taking from themselves and saying, how can I make the world a better place? How can I give of myself to make it a more beautiful place? And in a time of when the tikkun, the gullus was because of sinas chinam, isn't the tikkun on that ahavas chinam, doing beautiful things that were not really repaid for? So God becomes the first one to teach the Zion mitzvahs to the umas olam. And what does Reuven do? He becomes the one to say, I'm going to be outside the promised land to reach out to those who haven't made it. Reuven almost becomes the first shliach. You know, I'm not a chassid. I'm not a, you know, Lubavitcher chassid, and I never had the privilege of meeting Lubavitcher Rebbe or actually going to his kever. But I have to tell you, I travel a lot, and I've been to many places in the world on business and otherwise, and you see, this is a group of people who have committed their entire lives, the shluchim anyway. If you're traveling on business almost anywhere in the world and you need a meal, what's the first thing you do? You call up Chabad. I'll tell you a beautiful story. I was in Bologna around 3 weeks ago. Now, Bologna is in Italy. So you need a meal. Who do you call when you're in Bologna? You look up the phone book, you go on internet, and you see that there's a shliach there, his name is Rabbi Bernstein. So I call him. Yeah, they're always very friendly. And then I'm curious, I look up Bologna. Bologna is not the most friendly place. The Jews were expelled in 1553. You're listening to us on WMCA, the Nachum Siegel Network.com. So I'm in Bologna, and the Jews were expelled in Bologna in 1553. After they expelled the Jews, they dug up their bodies and they burned the bones. So the Marik, the great Marik, who's, you know, cited constantly in Shulchan Aruch, was expelled from Bologna. Rabbi Vadya Sferno from the Chumash, he was expelled from Bologna. The Rebbe said, he tells me the Rebbe sent him there some 40 some odd years ago. And I look at this fellow, he looks like he walked out of the Beis Medrash yesterday. And I say, do you have a minion? He says, no, the whole year there's no minion. Yom Kippur is a minion. But Shabbos, they allowed him to go to Firenze to daven a minyan. The Rebbe told him he can go. I say, And what do you do for food? He says, you know, he goes and he milks a cow for this. And I say, and does the community, do they support you? He says, some. And I said, and the others? He says, no. And I say, why? He says, Vailachzog ze Musa. He says, because I admonish them. And when they do averis, I try to correct them. He says, and there are those that do serious averis, and I try to fix their ways. And he's standing there, and he turns red, and he's shaking. And he says, because nishkin ois echad from the Shulchan Aruch megmin mevata zayin. He says, because every one of the commandments is holy and precious. And I'm looking at this man, and it's 6,500 miles from New York. He doesn't have a minion except for Yom Kippur. It's 42 years there, and he's shaking with Yerushalayim and with Ahavas Yisrael. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is really amazing. And then I'm thinking to myself, he goes to milk cows once a week so he could have Chalav Yisrael. I'm thinking, we were just talking about kosher Starbucks, how we could go to Starbucks and enjoy this and that. And this guy's 42 years in some midbar over here. So I think that there are a lot of very beautiful people. And during these 9 days, we have to celebrate the people like the Rubes and the Shluchim, and in general, the Hatzalah people, and everybody who reaches out to the other person, to the girls who shave their heads. This is a time to say, how can I say to the people I love, to my family members, put the crippled leg on me? How can I bear some of your pain, pick up the phone, take some of your stress onto me so that we could make this together a happier family, a better community, a better world? I think that's sort of the message. So I salute and I say, Rav Shlomo Kalbach, thank you for the beautiful Torah you told us. And when we read this week about B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, I'm going to look at them totally with a different eye. Thank you for your Torah. Next week we'll be Tisha B'Av. We will be speaking about some Hilchas Tisha B'Av. We will have Rabbi Baruch Hirschfeld speaking Halachas of Tisha B'Av, and Rabbi Twersky will be giving us some Divrei Hesoiris. May you all have a meaningful fast.